Chala Perek Aleph, Mishnah Gimel, 1-3. The previous two Mishnayos had established that the obligation to take challah from dough only applies to dough made of flour from the five grains, wheat, spelt, oats, barley, and rye. And the last words of the previous Mishnah were, v'chayavin b'challah uv'maisras, that produce from those five grains are obligated in challah, but also that they're subject to the requirements of maisras, meaning taking trumas of maisras, referring to the four steps, the four tithes that are taken from essentially all produce in Eretz Yisrael, that is Truma Gedola to Kohanim, then Maiser Rishon to Levi, then Trumas Maiser from the Levi to the Kohen, and finally Maiser Sheni or Maiser Ani, depending on which we were you're talking about. Okay, but the point of the last part of the mission was, in general, those five grains are subject to both Chala and Maisras requirements. Now here in Mishnah Gimel we say, Elo chayavin b'chala upatur min ha-maisras. Certain exceptions that we have grain which, if made into flour, will be subject to the chala requirements, but the grain itself was exempt from maisras, again, meaning all four of those things, trumas and maisras. And then Mishnah Dod will say examples the other way around, the things that are obligated in maisras but exempt from chala. Okay, it's here Mishnah Gimel, Elo chayavin b'chala. The following scenarios are such that if one made a requisite amount of flour, dough from such flour, there would be a challah obligation, but nevertheless the grain itself is patur min ha-maisras, is exempt from trumas ha-maisras, again, truma gadola, maiser rishon, trumas maiser, and maiser sheni or maiser ani. So the first three on the list, haleket v'hashicha v'hapeya, these are the gifts that are left for the poor from fields where grain is growing. Leket are stalks that fall, one or two stalks that fall as one is harvesting handfuls of stalks. So if one or two fall, you have to leave it as leket for the poor to collect those stalks. Hashicha is the forgotten little bundles, the sheaves that are made as one harvests. So one will essentially leave sheaves in the field, and then at the end of that process, one will collect those sheaves and bring them to the threshing floor. Any bundles, sheaves that are overlooked when one brings in the sheaves to the threshing floor, those are shicha and may not be gone back for. One may not go back for them. He has to leave them for the poor. And finally, vahapeya, that is the corner of one's field, which midrabban is a 60th of one's field, at least, that one leaves for the poor to come harvest themselves. So those three are applicable to all grain fields. And as we'll see in a second, they're exempt from the maisras requirements. But just let me add one more item to the list, which is the hefker, also hefker, that is to say, grain that is ownerless. Ownerless grain, provided it's ownerless at the time that it is subject to the tithing requirement, let's say kamar malacha, at that point, if it's ownerless, so it's also exempt from trumas and maisras. Again, the case is, for example, some wild wheat growing in the field somewhere that doesn't belong to anybody. So if one harvests that wheat from the wild, it will be exempt from trumas and maisras as long as it was hefker at some point prior to reaching the stage of gemar malacha. So these four on the list are all exempt from maisras for the same reason, and that is that the Torah basically says, since the Levi, Shevet Levi, and the Kohanim, who are members of Levi, were never given land, agricultural land in Eretz Yisrael, really. So the pasuk says, "Vaha Levi, Levi will come to collect. Ki ein lo chelik v'nach l'imach." He, the Levi, doesn't have a portion of agricultural land, or land at all, really, minus those cities, unlike the rest of Klal Yisrael. So we sort of have a compensation where the Levi is doing service for Klal Yisrael, he doesn't have land, but we will then give him trumas and maisras. So the drasha then comes to say that where he is on equal footing with you, meaning, for example, ownerless property, he has no more or less access to ownerless property than any other shevet does, so he has no special entitlement to trumas and maisras. So that being the case, since any poor Levi is just as welcome and able to access the leket shich and peah, or hefker, ownerless grain, as a non-Levi. There's no reason the Torah exempts him, that produce, from being subject to the Maaser's requirements. Okay? Notwithstanding, if one acquires such grain, takes possession of it, and it's no longer ownerless, etc., at the time one makes it into dough, so then it says, Ariso Seichem, it's got anything from your kneading bowl, is subject to Chala, says the Pasuk. The drasha actually technically is, it says, B'chalchem alechem ha'aretz, when you eat from the bread of the land, the drasha is, Me'ez alechem sheyeh, whatever bread it happens to be, afilim hefker, even if it came from hefker, it doesn't matter. Again, provided that at the time one kneads this flour into dough, it stopped being ownerless and now someone has taken possession from it. So again, these are examples, those four, where they're exempt from Trumas and Maestras, but obligated in Chala. More on the list is Umaiser Rishon Shnitla Trumaso. If you have Maiser Rishon, which had its Truma taken from it, it will be exempt from Trumas and Maestras, but obligated in Maiser, excuse me, in Chala. So the case here, and this actually might confound you at first because you think, wait a second, this is Maiser Rishon, so it's been, the Maiser has been taken from it because this is the Maiser. And it explicitly says, Shnitla Trumaso, its Truma has been taken also, so what's the exemption of not having to give Truma? So the answer is, this is a case where the Levi went to the farmer when the grain was still stalks prior to the processing of the grain. So he kind of cut the line going in front of the Kohen, and he says to the farmer, I will take those stalks as they are now, since I'm here, and the farmer gives it to Levi. In such a case, since there was never a processing of that grain before the Levi took possession, the grain will never be subject to the requirements of Truma Gedola, the gift to the Kohen, the primary gift to the Kohen. Of course, the Levi who takes it as Maaser Rishon, and he takes 10% of all that grain, he keeps it, he must still give 10% of his 10% as Trumas Maaser back to a Kohen, and that's what we're referring to here when it says, Shenitla Trumaso, it had its Truma taken from it. The Truma we're talking about is Trumas Maaser, the gift from the Levi to the Kohen. But the point of the mission here, putting this on the list of items that are exempt from Maaseres but subject to Chala, is that one need not take Truma Gedola from such grain, since the Levi took possession prior to it being subject to the requirements of Truma Gedola, and there's no need to go back. So it's exempt from Truma Gedola, and yet, if one takes this grain and makes it into flour and then dough, the dough is subject to the regular requirements of Chala. Next on the list, two more items, Umaiser Sheni and the Hekdesh, also Hekdesh, Sheniftu, if they've been redeemed. So each one in its own time. First, Umaiser Sheni that was redeemed. The case, you'll recall, Umaiser Sheni is the second tithe, which is given in years 1, 2, 4, and 5 of the 7-year Shemitah cycle. So after Truma Gedola and Umaiser Rishon was taken, then a person will take in those years 1, 2, 4, 5, he'll take Maaser Sheni, a second tithe, 10% of what remains after the Kohen and Levi got their portions. And that 10%, the Maaser Sheni, is to be taken to Yerushalayim and consumed over there. Now, one has the option, if he so chooses, to redeem the Maaser Sheni foodstuffs onto coins, deconsecrating the Maaser Rishon and making it just regular food. So our Mishnah's case is Maaser Sheni, food that had originally been consecrated with the sanctity of Maaser Sheni, but then it was nift, and that would have to be eaten in Yerushalayim. But if it is deconsecrated, it has pidyon happened to it, so then now it no longer, it's not subject to the Truma and Maaser obligations, but when one makes into dough, since it's private property at that point, he must take Chala. If it hadn't had pidyon happen to it, meaning it's Maaser Sheni, let's say a person takes the Maaser Sheni to Yerushalayim and he eats it there, making it into dough, etc., it will be exempt from the Chala obligation as well. And the reason why is because it's a machlokas tanaim, but we paskin that that Maaser Sheni is mamun gavoa, which means it's the property of on high, literally, meaning it's, so to speak, God's property. And when one eats Maaser Sheni, he's eating it because he's eating from God's table, so to speak. But it's not his property. So that being the case, it's exempt from the obligations of chal, etc., because not ariso sechem, it's not your kneading bowl, etc. It should be pointed out that if the wheat that was Maaser Sheni is redeemed and deconsecrated prior to being processed, so then when it's processed, it will have already been private property, no longer Mamon Gavoa. And that being the case, when it reaches the Gmar Malacha, the finishing of the processing, one would, in fact, have to take Trumas HaMaisros. Conversely, if it was processed while it was still Maaser Sheni, since it's outside of Yerushalayim, even the Shita holds that Mamon Gavoa, excuse me, that Maaser Sheni is not Mamon Gavoa, that's Mamon Hediot. That is to say, even according to the Shita, Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that the Maaser Sheni is private property, not Mamon Gavoa, he holds that's only true in Yerushalayim. But outside of Yerushalayim, all the Tanaim, both Rabbi and Rabbi Yehuda both agree that it's Mamon Gavoa, and that being the case, it's always going to be exempt from Trumas HaMaisros if it reaches Gmar Malacha as a Maaser Sheni, since it's not personal property. Okay, quite similarly, when it comes to Hekdesh that was deconsecrated, the same idea. If at the time the obligation to tithe kicked in, meaning the finishing of the processing, Gmar Malacha, it was still Hekdesh, property of the Beis HaMikdash, so then it's exempt from Trumas HaMaisros, even if later on it is deconsecrated, it has pidyon, meaning someone purchases the Hekdesh, whatever it is, the wheat from the Beis HaMikdash, since he takes possession of it only after the obligation is kicked in, it forevermore is exempt from the obligations of Trumas HaMaisros. But if he then goes and makes it into flour and dough, so then he will have to give challah. Again, worth pointing out, if the pidyon, the redemption of this hektish grain, happened prior to Gemar Malacha, meaning a person goes and buys a field, let's say, that had belonged to the Beis HaMikdash, and then he harvests the field, that wheat, although it had been hektish, and is hektish sheniftu, was redeemed, still, since it, the moment when the tithing obligation kicks in, at the completion of the processing, Gemar Malacha, it was privately owned, such grain would need to be tithed. Okay, fine. The next case in the Mishnah is Mosar HaOmer, which means the leftovers of the Omer. The case here is, we're talking about the, as we said, saw two Mishnahs ago, that on Erev Pesach, they would send out, the Beis HaMikdash would send out emissaries, would find top quality barley growing, they'd mark it off, and then comes Motzi Yom Tov Rishon of Pesach, meaning the beginning of the second day of Pesach. They would go out, they would harvest one eifa worth, which is three sa'a worth, we're talking quite a big volume, something like, say, 36 liters, that kind of amount, 10 gallons, something like that, worth of wheat, of barley, and they would, at the Beis HaMikdash, they would purchase from the landowner those eifa worth of barley, making it now sanctified with Kedushas Damim, like a Hekdesh, it's now sanctified property of the Beis HaMikdash, not with Kedushas Mizbeach, it's not a korban, it's just wheat, or excuse me, just barley, but it is still sanctified as Hekdesh. So what they would then do is take the Beis HaMikdash and process it fully, kicking in the obligations of Trumas HaMaisros, because the finishing of that little mini harvest is done, and since it was property of the Beis HaMikdash, at that time, it's exempt from Trumas HaMaisros. That's the first part of the Mishnah's point. But what happens next is they will sift it 13 times, getting very, very fine barley flour. That barley flour will be made into the Omer offering and brought in the Mizbeach. But all the other flour which is left behind that from the 13 siftings, that can be sold to whoever wants to purchase it. And upon being purchased, it's deconsecrated. That person who buys that flour, which is left over from making the Korban Omer, so that flour is exempt from Trumas HaMaisros, again, because at the time of Gmar Malacha, it was privately owned, it was owned by the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore exempt. But if he makes it into dough, so at that point, since it's privately owned, it's obligated in challah. And finally, utavua shlohevi shlish, if you have grain, wheat, barley, oats, spelled rye, that didn't grow even to a third of its total growth. So at that point, it's not considered to be subject to the tithing requirements whatsoever. It's not really even food. But the reason why it's exempt is that technically is from a gezerish. It's it's a limud from the pasuk, to drasha. The pasuk says, aser to aser, kol tvuas zarecha. You have to certainly tithe all of the tvuas zarecha, the produce of your seed. But the drasha is that it has to be tvua, which has viable seed. And if you would harvest so prematurely your grain that it hasn't even grown one third of its full growth, such seeds would not yield new plants. So it's exempt from tithing. That being the case, says the Tanakhama, it's exempt from Trumas HaMaisers, but still, if you make it into dough and choose to eat it, so that would be considered dough, and the Pasuk doesn't specify to the contrary. It's a Gezeirah Shavah that comes from the two words lechem. That's referred, lechem is referred both to challah as well as to matzah on Pesach, and just as matzah on Pesach is eligible even if it came from wheat that was not even a third grown, so to challah kicks in as an obligation, even if you're talking about wheat that hadn't been a third grown, etc. Okay, so that's the shita of the Tanakhama, that if it hadn't grown a third of the grain of its full growth, then it's exempt from Trumas HaMaisros, though it's obligated in challah. And Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Tavua Shelo Hevia Shlish. Rabbi Eliezer disagrees. He says if you have Truma that didn't grow even to a third of its full growth, Paturim and Achala, it's even exempt from challah. His reason is based on a different limud. He rejects the Gezer Shav and said he's a different limud. And that limud is connecting, it's a hekesh, which connects chala to truma, because the pasuk says, Reshus Ariso Seichem, chala truma, truma. The first part of your kneading bowl will be chala, and lifted up as truma. Katrumas Gorin Kantrimosa. It should be taken aside and elevated like the truma that one gives at the threshing floor. So we connect just as the truma of the threshing floor doesn't apply where you have produce that hasn't grown to a third, so too the obligation to take challah wouldn't apply, says Rabbi Eliezer, to grain that hadn't grown to a third. However, the Bar Tanur speaks out, the halacha is not like Rabbi Eliezer, rather the Tanakhama, that if you haven't had your grain grow to a third, it is exempt from Trumas HaMaisros, but will be obligated in challah.